if you want to have your clients achieve more, grow your business, and then worry less about what AI, the future of AI means for your role and insulate your value against that, that's the benefit of learning behavioral finance and applying the human side.
The heart of advice. It's personal. It's pragmatic. Here on the eMoney Heart of Advice podcast, we explore how to navigate both sides to help you take your financial planning practice to the next level. Join us as we speak with financial professionals to learn how they deepen relationships and improve client outcomes. This podcast contains purely educational information, and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor or any of its affiliates or subsidiaries.
Welcome to the Heart of Advice podcast, presented by eMoney. I'm Sasha Grabenstetter.
And I'm Connor Sung. We're your eMoney experts. Today on the podcast, we have Brendan Frazier. Brendan is the Chief Behavioral Officer at RFG Advisory. He's the host of the Human Side of Money podcast, twice named Investopedia Top 100, keynote speaker, and alumni of Belmont University. Brendan, first off, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the work that you guys do, the focus of the Heart of Advice podcast. And so it's a privilege and an honor to be here.
Near and dear to both of our hearts, or all of our hearts.
Hearts, pun intended, right?
Yes.
Just to start off, you have a unique pathway to kind of where you ended up at RFG today. Do you mind just talking to us a little bit about the journey, kind of how you ended up where you're at?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll actually use this as a way to point out, or somewhat of a teaching moment around some of the things we may end up talking about. But for anybody that's wondering, or any advisors that are like, hey, I want to get these people that I'm meeting with for the first or the second time, I want to get them to open up and trust me and connect with me. One of the best ways to do that is you want to try to get them out of their head and into their heart and speaking with emotion and creating conversational flow. And a key to doing that is to ask them questions that are easy and emotional to answer. And if you think about it, easy questions to answer and emotional questions often delve back into our past because it's something that we've lived before, likely something that we've told before, and we love talking about ourselves. So there's this emotional component. So even asking that question right out of the gate is just a great question to kind of get me into the flow, get me going. The only risky run at this point, by the way, is that I could probably go forever because I get to talk about myself and my past. So I'm going to try to not do that and make it as succinct and hit the highlights as much as possible to the degree that it matters to anybody that's listening. So I started off consulting with financial advisors. And in that job, it was great because I got to literally meet and talk with probably close to thousands of them over the course of my time doing that. And there is this constant, I guess you call it theme, this constant thing that kept coming up where you would hear in some way, shape, or form them allude to the fact that they feel more like therapists than advisors at times. Or the other way you've heard it said or phrased is, sometimes I feel like more of a psychologist than I do a financial advisor. Or I'd be better off with a degree in psychology or a master's in therapy than finance and accounting. And nobody ever actually thought that was 100% true, but there was this realization that this job requires more than just an understanding of numbers. It actually requires an understanding of people. And so I decided, you know what? Everybody says this. We all agree. Nobody really doubts it. I was wanting to find out, what are you doing about that? Like, if it's that important, what's the solution? How do you hone that skill set? How do you know what to work on? So I started asking everybody, all these conversations I would have. And the best response you'd ever get was, well, I read a book. And you're like, well, books are good. Books are good. We like books. But is that enough? Right? If we've got people that, if it's that important, are there other ways? Are there other things? And of course, even then reading books, it was never like, it wasn't the CFP. If you read to study for the CFP, reading a book that's very practical and specific to financial planning, these books that they're reading weren't even about how to do it with clients when it comes to financial advice. And that's not necessarily bad. But again, it just kind of came back to, well, this could be better. So kind of around this time, I decided I was going to go out and start my own advisory business and launch that. This is back in 2018. And along the way, I had this fascination with the human side, the behavioral aspect and component. And I decided that as I was doing that and running this advisory business and getting it off the ground and working with clients, that I was going to, at the same time, go on this journey to try to get better at the human side. And so it was a lot of like reading and research. But one of the other key components of that was I decided I was going to start a podcast. And on this podcast, the idea was to have the guests and experts that had the answers to the human side, but we needed to figure out how to bring it to financial advice. Or sometimes they were already in the industry and it was just a matter of like trying to amplify the voice and make it louder. So I went on my own journey to figure all this stuff out and figured worst case scenario, I'm going to learn a lot that I can use and apply in my business and with my clients. Well, fast forward about 4 years later, and it turns out there was a lot of interest and demand for this. Almost like, hey, wait a minute. We all thought this was important and it's nice to have like a way to learn it. It's nice to have this medium to learn. So I just started learning on my own. And then other people sort of started following on this journey through the podcast and social media. And so about 4 years later, I'm working as an advisor, but I'm also getting these requests to go speak on this stuff, to host advisor coachings and trainings on it. So I'm doing both, and I've got two kids at home, my wife, and basically like you can't give 100% to all three of those things, or you can try, but like something's got to give. And so I decided, all right, I've got to make a decision, and decided that I was enjoying this work with the podcast and coaching and speaking more. I went down that path and said, I want to help solve this human side thing for advisors. And then fast forward another 2 years-ish later, RFG comes calling and they're like, hey, we think the future of the industry, the future of this profession, it lies on the human side. The advisors are going to be just as much like life advisors and human advisors and need that skill set as they are the technical side. And I was like, really? You think so? I kind of tend to agree. What we align on that. And I'd actually written, I had saved in my articles to write from back in 2018. I had this title already put in there. And one day it was like, one day I want to write the article. And the title was Why Every Firm Will Need a Chief Behavioral Officer in 10 Years. And so they're like, here's the title we're thinking about. They said Chief Behavioral Officer. And I was kind of like, no way. You've got to be kidding me. And so there's a lot more that went into all that, right? But it provided the opportunity to get to do this and make an impact on a bigger scale and get to work with advisors and their clients to spread this message. And so that's kind of the journey of how we got to this point today.
First off, it's incredible. You also speak my language, coming from being a financial counselor and really living that life and that background for so long. I want to say I appreciate the human side of all that you're doing to help advisors get there. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And I admire what you're doing. And I've learned a lot from some of the things that you've written and put out there in eMoney. No joke, not just saying that. This isn't like a you pat my back, I'll pat yours. It's actually the truth. And the one thing I always forget in that story that is actually pretty important, but not really relevant, but I'll mention anyways, is my wife is a therapist. And so like as I'm doing my advisory career, she's going to get her master's in therapy and we're talking. And she's telling me all these things that they're doing and learning about how to build connection, set up an environment where people are more willing to open up, like different approaches to conversations. And I'm sitting there like, that's cool. It feels like I should know this. Like I'm trying to get people to do the same thing, but you're getting taught how to do it and I'm not. And so that was also another impetus, was kind of seeing like, okay, maybe we're not therapists, but there's a skill set that we can adopt that still translates and benefits us like when working with clients. And so that was another component of it too.
Definitely. Those interpersonal skills are just so imperative.
That's right.
I kind of want to piggyback off of this because, as you might know, I come from originally from academia, and so does my colleague, Dr. Emily Kuschel. And we always joke that research is me search. And so I just want to ask about, you know, why behavioral finance? Like, what got you interested in it other than just having these conversations with advisors? Was there something internally that you wanted to know more about?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm laughing because every time I've had a researcher on the show, I think 90% of the time, the vast majority of the time, they all mention this me search term. It's how I've learned it, is from having people on the show. But part of the reason I like having researchers on is because it's like bridging the gap between research and application. So advisors can go, hey, the research is out there. What do I need to do to apply it day in and day out? I wish I had a really cool good answer for why behavioral finance. I mean, I know there's a couple client stories that always kind of shocked me, like showing a client that they could retire and them not being able to pull the trigger and actually do it, despite the fact that all the numbers and projections, the planning software would say like, hey, you can definitely retire and it's going to be, and you're, it's going to look great. Like you have nothing to worry about. And they still couldn't pull the trigger and transition to this idea of living off of their savings. There was one specific meeting like around that really stuck out to me. And I remember thinking like, I mean, I don't know what else to do. I can show them as many numbers, charts, and projections as I want, but it's not actually going to change their mind and get this person to actually retire and do the thing that he's been building towards and wanting to do the last 20 years of his life. And so that was eye-opening. But maybe this isn't right, but the main thing I usually attribute it to is two books, actually. One of them is called The Undoing Project by Michael Lewis. And it essentially, I read it and I was like, oh wow, my mind is tricking me into bad decisions all of the time. And it was really humbling. Like you kind of look at it and you're like, I know nothing. I don't trust myself. I mean, you know, to some degree. And so that opened my eyes to this whole like psychology component of not just money, but also like our mind. We can't necessarily trust our mind. And so the other one that was more directly related to financial advice is Advice That Sticks by Moira Summers. And I remember reading that book, and it was in like 2018, I think, and just sitting there and devouring it and being like, I can't believe this is all fascinating and important. And I can't believe it's not talked about more. It's Dr. Moira Summers. She's an academic at heart, great research. It's actually up here on my bookshelf behind me. But I always say it's like should be required reading for anybody that works with clients and their money, because it just basically talks about why people don't follow through on advice, the challenges that are presented, why it's oftentimes maybe our fault, and why we have to look at it and go, hey, is it possible that we're playing a role in this? And then things to do to help them change their behavior. So reading that, I was kind of like, how is this not, I feel like everybody should read this, but it was sort of like this hidden gem. So that's the best thing. That was sort of my gateway. I was like, I'm really interested in this stuff more than I am like Roth conversions. And so I started just diving more so into like, why do we do the things that we do? And when they don't seem to make sense.
That resonates so much with me. Just thinking about some of like the science is always the science, right? Like the mathematical answer, there's 1 + 1 is pretty much always going to equal 2, except for when humans are involved, and then 1 + 1 never equals 2. And being able to just have, I think it's a mindset shift that I think I know that all humans can benefit from, but especially in like people helping careers, I think being a little bit more open to understanding yourself a little bit better in order to understand other people better. And then ultimately, if you can do that, then whatever career, whatever you're helping those people with, I think you'll just be able to be a more effective communicator, better relationships, and just a better human.
There's no doubt about that. Like self-awareness is a really powerful thing, and knowing yourself and like when your, we'll call them issues, are coming up, or when your beliefs and perspectives are infiltrating the conversation and even the advice that you're giving. I know like if you read anything on emotional intelligence, like one of the core tenets of somebody that's highly emotionally intelligent is a level of self-awareness. And in addition to all that, it's really, really hard to do, because most people are like, yeah, it's not, I want to tell other people what they're doing wrong and where their weaknesses are, but I'm not so sure that I want to be exposed to my, it's not just about weaknesses. I get it. But it's funny. Like, yes, that is really important. And at the same time, very rarely do we see people rushing to be like, yeah, you know what, help point out some of my flaws and issues that I need to address and work on.
I completely agree with that. And earlier you said, you know, like the psychological piece of like kind of staying in your routine, because that's what you know. And even if it's bad for you, like that's really common. So this actually kind of leads me into our next question, Brendan, about, I want to know what you think like the most valuable thing financial advisors gain from effectively incorporating behavioral finance principles into their practice.
I would say a few things. One is, you're going to have better outcomes for your clients. Your clients are going to get better outcomes because if you do let me pause there for a second, zoom back out and say, behavioral finance is a term that I think can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Definitely.
I'm going to, for the sake of my answer here in this conversation, I'm going to edit it and revise it and call it the human side. So like, I think just to make sure we're not just talking about just behavior, but also like communication skills and different other things that go just beyond how somebody behaves and behavior change. So, if you embrace and you apply the human side, number one, you're going to get better outcomes for your clients, which at the end of the day should probably be the single most important thing. The number one reason why to do it is because if your clients, the more they trust you, the more they think that you have their best interests at heart, the more they feel like you truly get them and understand them and know what's important to them, the more likely they are to listen and do the things that they're supposed to do. At the same time, the more they like you, the more they trust you, they're going to follow through. But if you also know, hey, here are ways to help people overcome the hurdles to changing their behavior, here are the things that help people actually follow through and do the things that they're supposed to do, even though they don't want to do them and implement. If you know those things, they're going to be more likely to do them and implement them, right? So in other words, if you're good at the human aspect, you're going to have clients that are more likely to stay invested through a down market. You're going to have clients that are more likely to actually go out and get their estate planning lined up. Clients who are more likely to engage in multi-generational conversations with their family members around their estate and legacy planning. You're going to have clients that the person that you won't have as many clients who are like, yeah, I know I need to start saving more to be able to retire. I know, but it's so hard to do. You're going to be able to help them do the things they need to do to accomplish their goals. So first and foremost, there's the client benefits. And at the same time, the more you learn about human behavior, the more you learn that we're pretty, just by nature, we want to do things for other people, but we also need like a motivator for ourselves, right? Well, that's good. I want to help clients, but is there anything in it for me kind of thing? And there's a lot of different paths we can go here, a lot of research that's out there. But what I would say is if you're doing this well and you're doing it right, that number one, you're going to get more prospects to become clients. You're going to have clients that stay around longer. So you're going to have a higher retention rate, which is great for the long-term value of your business. And you're going to get more referrals, right? Because you're providing a connection and an experience that looks different than the vast majority of advisors that are out there. And so some people are probably listening to this podcast thinking, well, how much different is it? Like, I mean, the people that I know and talk to in this podcast I listen to, we talk about this stuff. I'm surrounded by, just know we live in a bubble. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you're not the average advisor, right? And so it still amazes me because I live in this bubble too, but you go out and you talk, like go to conferences and stuff, and you'd be amazed at how many people are like, yeah, I meet once a year with my clients and we talk about the portfolio and investments and then we move on. And it's like, that's not bad, but the bar is not set very high. So anyway, so there's a truly a business benefit, a growth benefit to be had in your business. And there's research that backs this up. And then lastly, I would say, if nothing else, if it's not enough to say my clients are better off and I'm going to be able to grow my business, the last one I would say is it's also probably the number one way you can insulate your value as technology continues to grow and advance and proliferate. It is like we have to lean into the element that technology and AI hasn't really, shouldn't say hasn't mastered, but they can't replicate to the same degree that we can. So if you want to have your clients achieve more, grow your business, and then worry less about what AI, the future of AI means for your role and insulate your value against that, that's the benefit of learning behavioral finance and applying the human side.
And if I'm an advisor and I've sat down and I've decided that whether it's a mental gratification or if I buy into one of the compensation, like actual monetary benefits of diving into this, where would you recommend somebody starts? And given that we're also, again, speaking to this small majority of financial professionals that listen to our podcast here, where do you think that these folks should go to either begin their journey to figure out kind of where they're at as far as the human side skills go, or to continue to elevate themselves?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And one that I get a lot and one that I've asked a lot. And the more that I ask it and the more that I get it, the more I go, There are so many different answers to this one question, but I think it's the right question because so many people are going to be asking it, right? They get to the point where they're like, okay, yes, it's important. Now, what do I do from here? And so I think it kind of depends on where you're at in your business to some degree. On another hand, I think it kind of depends on what your natural skill set is. So when I say that, what I mean is some people are just naturally great at relationships, connection, and communication,
right?
And so for them, I would say, you know what, if you excel in that, then we can probably focus on other areas. But if we were to say blanket statement, if you were to work on one thing that anybody listening could benefit from by learning it and applying it tomorrow, no matter where they're at or who their clients are, or what type of service they provide, it would have to be around developing better communication skills, like skills that build trust and connection and then help you communicate and convey topics in a meaningful and understandable way. And I say that because no matter what, no matter where you're at, no matter what stage you're at, no matter who you're working with or where you're at in the business, it still comes down to trust and connection. If you want to get prospects to become clients or you want to keep clients for a long time, nobody says, like, you know, I don't think my clients trusting me is a very important thing, right? And just nobody actually says that. So the most practical, beneficial for anybody generically that's listening is just learning how to hone and develop communication skills that build trust and connection.
Yeah, I love that answer. And it definitely circles back to some of the research that eMoney has done over the course of the last 12 months. I would be remiss if I also didn't just say AI, so that we've now have two versions of it across the recording here. But I really do believe that, like, the value of the advisor is continuing to shift. And before, it might have been, you know, this movement into more holistic financial planning. I think technology is going to end up being the force factor, the variable that's going to force again the value of the advisor to shift again. And the relationship, the human side, like that is now going to become that, where, you know, technology is evolving so quickly that a lot of, like, you know, we talk a lot about the commoditization of some of the services that were historically delivered, but I think that commoditization is happening at an even faster speed today. And the enhancement of the human aspect, like the human element, the human side, is going to continue to have even higher of a percentage of importance than it has in the past.
Yeah. I mean, certainly bias, but 100% agree. I mean, like, couldn't have said it any better. I think, and if you look at, and I think the thing you said that I really like and I think is important is you said it's going to grow and happen faster, the growth of technology. There's a guy named Tim Urban. He writes a blog called Wait But Why, and he's illustrated this. He's tried to convey this concept in his blog. It's really, really good. And I think it was written back in like 2015 or 16. It's about artificial intelligence. So if you Google Wait But Why artificial intelligence, he explains it really well. But he has this chart where it's like, we think technology grows linearly, right? Like, it's just like this linear growth path. And it's like, we're eventually one day we're going to get there, but it actually grows exponentially. Like, that's how it learns and grows. And so it's going to grow way faster. It's going to advance way faster than we probably think or can comprehend. And so, to your point, right, if you think about it, it's like, okay, if technology is going to get better and better and better, where is it? What is it doing that it's going to do faster, cheaper, and more reliably than a human? And almost, I mean, the majority of the answers there are all around the technical aspects of planning. And you guys may have seen this, but Vanguard did a study where they went out and they asked people, hey, what do you value most from a human advisor? What do you value most from technology? And I wish I had the responses in front of me right now, but the thing they want from technology was like rebalances my portfolio or portfolio optimization, minimizes taxes. It was all, not, of course, they're not coming to me now, but if you go look through it, like, the top answers were all things that technology can do and does faster, cheaper, and more reliably. And then the main things they want from humans were basically, it boiled down to, like, want to feel heard and understood, make sure that they know the things that are important to me, be listened to with empathy, right? And so that's only going to become magnified as technology does more of those things better than we do. Our advantage really at that point is going to have to pivot to, what do we do like at really, really well that technology can't replicate that people want? And that points, again, call me biased. Maybe I'm missing something. But to me, that points directly to like the human element and embracing that and learning that and developing that skill set. And then what's cool is you can pair this better human skill set, we'll call it, the things that we do well, with the things that AI do well, not just well, they do better than AI, technology, whatever, that they do better than we do. You pair those together, and we should, at that point, we should actually be delivering advice at a higher level than we are now. Right? If we're just leaning into the strengths of both parties, if you want to call them parties, whatever you want to call them, if we're letting both things do what they excel in, then we should be delivering a quality of advice that's higher than, better than we've ever seen.
I can agree with that. I think, Brendan, I don't know if you're familiar, but we recently just released our own AI research, and we found was that these human-centric skills are what's going to be, you know, the thing that we need for the future, especially the future of the next generation. And just like quickly, like, and Connor knows this, that, you know, I've been working with the Foundation for Financial Planning on some curriculum to help foster pro bono. And all the things that you're talking about, these human skills, are the things that we're focusing on, you know, empathy and emotional intelligence and how to have some cultural humility and how to have better communication skills and how to learn a couple dynamics. So I'm just really excited about the future of what this looks like. So
well, I guess just circling back to just humans in general, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. So some of the interpersonal skills training and things that I've done, I apply very well to my professional life. But honestly, most of the value that I've gleaned from it immediately was like, oh my God, this is what I need to do in my own household. Like, my personal life has definitely changed just as much as it's helped in my professional life. So if that is the value that's garnered from, if that's the push, like if you want to do whatever inside your own household, that is also a benefit of spending some time and investing in yourself in the human side space.
Well, okay. So it's funny you say that, because I almost mentioned that when you said, what's something that they should, where should you start? What should you do? And we went and said, okay, we'll develop these skills because you can apply it no matter where you're at or who you're with. But I almost mentioned in the another benefit, an ancillary benefit of that, is that you can also use it in life, like with friends, at parties, with family, especially. In fact, I was doing a training with an RIA, and we were going through some of the communication skills to get people to open up and connect. So we were going through that. We got back together like the next week to kind of reflect and debrief on like, okay, how did it go? What are you thinking? What worked? What didn't? And one of the ladies that was in there was like, okay, I want to say something. I thought it was fine. It was good with our clients. But the best part about this was I used some of this with my 19-year-old son, and he actually opened up and started talking to me. And I was like, yes, yes. That was like the coolest thing I'd heard. I mean, yeah, it's cool to help clients, advisors and their clients too. But it's like these things, at the end of the day, we're all humans. We all communicate. But I just thought that was such a cool example. She was like, yeah, yeah, the clients, certainly, yeah, that was good. My 19-year-old son told me some things. I learned about him.
That's so funny. It is so true, though. And it honestly, it does make a huge, meaningful difference in just life and being a better human. But speaking about being human, I think we can all agree that humans are fallible, and people make interesting decisions sometimes. As you think back across all of the engagements that you've had, both through coaching, through your own advisory practice, through, you know, everything that you've done with the podcast, what still surprises you about human behavior or human habits, whether it could pertain directly to their personal finances or not, but just something that really still kind of catches your breath?
Man, that's a good one. I'm pretty sure that my answer today is the same answer I would have given back when this whole journey started. And I have more awareness. I know why it happens. I have more awareness around it, but it still blows my mind. Okay. So what is it? It's the whole idea. And this isn't novel, by the way. We all know this to be true. It's this idea that we can know exactly what we're supposed to do to get the outcome that we want in any area of life and not do it. Like, we could say there's no shortage of information on how to do anything in life, right? So how do you be an how do you excel at parenting? How do you excel in a marriage? How do you excel in business? Like, the answers are endless. You could find like endless amounts of information on how to be a great parent, live in a thriving marriage, and have a booming business that turns into $1 billion. But it's, we don't have an information problem. Right. Ultimately, all that's out there. And despite that, it's still really, really hard for us to do the things to get there. And then the example that I think of all the time always comes back to health. So there's a study that was done, I forget when it was, doesn't really matter, but and I'm no expert when it comes to anything in the medical profession, but what I've learned from reading this study is that heart bypass surgery is a really expensive and invasive surgery, one that most people don't want to go through if they don't have to. The other thing that I learned about heart bypass surgery is that it's not a cure. Right? So a lot of people probably, they're like, yeah, Brendan, we know. But for those of you that were like me and you didn't, that like they go in, they put a stent in, it opens up the valve, it gets blood flowing through, but it doesn't mean that it's going to stay like that forever. And so they took this sample of about 2,000 heart bypass patients. And they went to them and they said, hey, guys, you just had heart bypass surgery. It's expensive, it's invasive, and it's not a cure. So if you want to not have heart bypass surgery again, if you want to live longer and be healthier and avoid this same exact scenario again in like 2 years in the future, you have to do one of a few, you have to change your lifestyle. You have to eat less, eat healthier, work out more, stop smoking, right? And it's like they go to and they tell them all these things. Fast forward 2 years later, and 90% of these heart bypass patients haven't altered their lifestyle at all. And I, it's the best example I know of to sit there and go, wait a minute. If we're not going to be able to do the things that we're supposed to do in a matter of, like, quite frankly, life and death, like, we know what to do and we still can't do it. To me, that's mind blowing. It's like, hey, if you don't do this, you're probably going to be back in here or you're going to die of a heart attack. And 90% of people still can't change their behavior to do the thing they're supposed to, not because they don't have the information or know how to do it, but behavior change is really, really hard. There's a quote, I've mentioned it a lot at this point, but it's still so good I mentioned it anyways, by a guy named Derek. I think he says it Sievers, maybe Sivers. Anyways, Derek Sievers, he says that if all we needed was information, we'd all be billionaires with six packs, because we don't need to know what to do. That's not the problem. The problem is actually doing it. And that, I think that will forever be the thing that continues to blow my mind, is that you could sit down and say, I want to do X and I'm motivated to do it. And then somebody else could say, okay, great. Here's how you do it. Do this, 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 and this. And then the odds of actually doing it are not in your favor. That concept to this day, I now know more around why it happens and how to help overcome it. But at the end of the day, it's the main problem that we battle. And I don't think I'll ever be able to fully wrap my mind around the fact that you can't, that you can't know, just knowing what to do is not enough.
I was just going to say, as a serial offender of that, I can definitely relate.
Me too. I think maybe that's probably why I like it too, because I'm like, well, at least I'm not the only one. Other people are like me.
It's true. But it goes back to that neuroplasticity piece of, like, this is the routine I'm in. And I, even if it's bad for me, I'll continue to keep doing it. So making those changes can be really difficult for people. As we all know. So,
yeah, I mean, everybody listening has something where they're like, yeah, I want to do this and I'm not quite doing it. I've wanted to do that, or I need to do this. Why can't I do it? I mean, literally nobody's immune. Nobody's immune to that.
So that's what we get targeted social media ads for.
That's it. There you go. Positive spin. Nicely done. Well done.
Yeah.
Thanks. I want to pivot a little bit. Brendan, I'm not sure if you're aware, but this year is eMoney's 25th anniversary. And as such, we have a handful of questions just as we kind of look back over the last 25 years and look forward over the next 25. As you think about 25 years in business, and the role technology has kind of played in the evolution of financial planning, I know we talked about it a little bit, but are there any specific innovations or tools or things that you feel like will quickly become table stakes moving forward as it pertains to personal financial planning?
Well, first of all, congratulations on 25 years. I did not know that. That's awesome and cool. And you guys are continuing. I'm sure there's awesome things on the horizon. I don't know. I think we've sort of hit on like the main thing. The main thing that excites me, and this isn't like, well, it could be long term. I guess nobody really knows for sure. The main thing that excites me is I just have to imagine, based on what we see currently in the industry, as far as the focus, but also like the technology that keeps coming out and the way that we see it utilized and enhancing and the ChatGPT and blah, blah, blah. I have to imagine that there's going to be more and more focus on how do we leverage this to automate as many back office tasks as possible. How do we save more time on things that don't matter as much for human beings to do, that technology can do? And that's only going to put more of a focus on the things we can do to have better relationships and deeper trust and connection and help people not just invest their money, but like start learning, hey, how do I use this money to fund the life that I want to live? We get to have more conversations around, hey, you've got all this wealth, right? What is it that you want to do? What are the things that are truly most important to you in your life? We want to align those things. There's going to be more time and capacity to do that and go deeper on a human level, which again, it's not, we've already sort of talked about it, but that part really excites me because I think when we do that, that not only will clients ultimately like be better off because they're getting serviced and they're actually getting they're getting a better quality of advice. But at the same time, the other thing that comes to mind there is it's like, I think our profession as a whole, the reputation, the image of our profession should also raise, it should also go up at the same time. It should also improve, I guess we'd say, because we're developing deeper relationships, providing a better level of service. And it, as a result, we're not going to be the, oh, they're just trying to sell me some insurance anymore, right? We're having to evolve and become deliver a higher quality of advice.
I just want to reiterate, like, we just recently had a panel of individuals talking about like what the next generation really needs. And this is what's coming out is the human side. And so I'm pretty excited about this. I want to just transition to, we've talked a lot about human sides, and on your podcast, The Human Side of Money, what's one of your favorite conversations or like knowledge nuggets one of your guests has dropped on you? I'd love to hear that.
That is not a fair question, just so you know.
So sorry.
I mean, that's one where it's like, so I got a text yesterday from somebody on the podcast. I'll ask, hey, if you could gift one book to everybody listening, what would it be? And then this person flipped it around on me and he's like, hey, you always ask this, what would yours be? And I'm like, hang on, that's not a fair question. There's too many choices. This feels even harder than that, where it's like, how do I go back and pick from however many 100+ conversations with awesome, bright, smart people? Like, I guess the closest thing, it's like, how do you pick your favorite kid? But this feels even harder than that, because there are times when I definitely have a favorite kid. So I think I'll just say what comes to mind first. Doesn't mean it's the best answer, but it's what pops up. And there's two things. Well, I should probably mention episode 114 with Emily Kuschel from eMoney as being like the best episode, right? Shouldn't I throw that part out there?
Right. You should.
Aside from that, we'll say that one doesn't count. We need to move on from that. We'll disqualify that one. Too much bias. Two things. One, this happened back in episode 33. I had a guest on. She's an advisor. Her name's Natalie Taylor. And it didn't hit me as much at the time. Like, it kind of did hit me at the time, but I kept getting this feedback afterwards where people were like, wow, that was interesting. Wow, I've never thought about it before like that. So I was like, yeah, I guess that was pretty interesting. So she talks about a lot in there, but the one thing she said that was eye-opening, especially in this industry, was, and I may botch the quote a little bit, but it was some version of, whenever she goes to provide the advice or gets to an implementation phase with her clients, she goes, I believe that we're better off giving them advice that's 80% optimal that they'll actually implement than advice that's 100% technically sound and optimal that they have no chance of implementing. And I think it sort of like reverberated throughout the advisor community in the sense of like, wait, what? You would give somebody not perfectly sound spreadsheet calculated advice in order, like, how do you do that? It's like, well, the advice that gets implemented, it's always going to be better and have better outcomes, the advice that's not. So that's one I think it sticks with me probably because to this day, it was like one of the ones that just really hit hard right out of the gate. And then the other one is another thing that comes up is Megan Lertz has been on numerous times because she does such great work on this stuff. And she taught me some things. We recorded an episode on how to ask questions, and it ended up being two episodes because there was so much good stuff. And just the simple reframing of not asking a question, but instead inviting information in conversation. So instead of saying, why do you want to retire at 65? Like, asking it like that can sound accusatory. It can actually impact the response that you're getting from the person. We don't really think of that necessarily, but she was like, instead of asking a question, you want to invite information. So you use phrases like to collaborate, like I wonder or I'm curious. So somebody says they want to retire at 65, and instead of saying, oh, why do you want to retire at 65? You go, oh, that's interesting. I'm kind of curious. What prompted age 65? Right. So you're still asking the question, but you're leading up to it with a warmer collaborative approach of, I'm curious, you know, I'm wondering if we did this, how would that impact your situation? So then it's not your idea, but it's their idea. It was just this like next level question workshop, masterclass essentially. Whereas, so then I took what we talked about, and I went back and started applying it in life, and it started working. And I was like, whoa, this is great. And so if you listen to the podcast now, you'll hear me do it on there because it's like now a habit of mine where I'm like, okay, don't ask the question, like frame it in a different way. Ask it or invite information. Don't ask a question. So anyways, those are two that come to mind. You can't go wrong with those two.
Those are perfect. And I think they give folks some immediate takeaways as they think about, you know, practical application of some of the stuff that we've talked about today. Dr. Lertz, definitely somebody that we partner with as well. And, you know, her question framework is magical. And when you get hit by it, you don't even know that you got hit by it until you sit back and think about it. And you're like, wait, I just gave way more information than I was intending to. And I don't know how I feel about it, but it's out there now. So
yeah, she calls that a vulnerability hangover. When you're like, I just revealed quite a bit. Did they want to hear all that? I don't know if they wanted to hear that.
Well, just to round us out, Brendan, number one, I appreciate the time. But lastly, we asked all of our guests the final same question, which is, how would you define the heart of advice when it comes to financial planning?
Yeah, I think I would define it the same way, right along a parallel track. The heart of advice is the human side of advice. It goes beyond numbers and dollar signs. It's not about balance sheets. It's more about like behavior. It's not about what happens with your budget. It's about what happens in your brain when you're dealing with your money. It's not about volatility in the markets. It's more about the values that you're bringing in order to learn how to use your money to align it with the life you want to live. And on and on. It's more than the numbers. It goes deeper, and it's an understanding of the people and the human beings that we get the privilege to work with and to serve every day.
You've talked about all the things that like make my heart happy as a financial counselor. So thank you. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on. And I didn't know you were doing that work with Foundation for Financial Planning, but everything you went through as far as the curriculum and the topics, I was sitting there like, yes, 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 we need more of that. It's just cool. I mean, it's actually really is cool to see that as an industry or profession, as we like, there's a movement, right? We're recognizing the importance of this stuff. And so like, if you went to me back whenever I started and my thought was like, hey, why are we not getting any training or development or focus on this? Like that's changing. There's like what you're doing is out there now. There's other trainings and designations that are focused on it. And it's just cool to see that we're embracing this and not just embracing it, but actually doing something about it.
Thank you, Brennan.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
The Heart of Advice podcast is produced by eMoney Advisor, a leading provider of technology solutions and services that help people talk about money. Learn more at eMoneyAdvisor.com, where you can find additional resources for advisor success, including the Heart of Advice blog, as well as eBooks, CE webinars, and events.